Es gibt Momente, da schleicht es sich in unser Bewusstsein, dieses hohe, beständige Surren, kaum hörbar, aber einmal da, auch nicht mehr wirklich zu ignorieren. Die meisten dieser Momente sind Momente der Befremdung, die erste Nacht in einer frisch gezogenen Wohnung etwa oder abends alleine in einem billigen Hotelzimmer in einer unbekannten Stadt. Einmal mehr der Gedanke in unseren Wänden, da lebt es, da pulsiert ein unaufhörlicher Fluss elektromagnetischer Information. Hat sich dieser Gedanke erst einmal unserer Vorstellung bemächtigt, führt kein Weg mehr an diesem hohen, beständigen Surm vorbei. Ganz im Gegenteil, je angestrengter wir versuchen, es wegzudenken, umso lauter scheint es zu werden. Hat sich hier soeben eine bislang unbeachtete Lebensform den Weg in unsere Gehörgänge freigesprengt, oder ist es doch nur der neue Kühlschrank, der so fremd klingt? Susanne Niedermayer begrüßt Sie zu einer weiteren Ausgabe des Kunstradios, heute in Kooperation mit Zeiton, anlässlich des Phonotaktik Festivals in Wien, das heute Abend vor wenigen Stunden eröffnet wurde. Bis einschließlich 5. Mai gibt es täglich elektronische Musik vom Feinsten zu hören. Und das an einigen der eigenwilligsten Locations, die Wien zu bieten hat. Im Planetarium etwa, in der Urania, im Kriminalmuseum, im Wiener Stadionbad oder in der Wartburger Kirche, um nur einige der Veranstaltungsorte zu nennen. Pay attention, if you care. Mit diesem Slogan machen die Veranstalter seit mehreren Wochen auf sich aufmerksam. Jeder hat die Möglichkeit, Veranstaltungen gratis zu besuchen. Vorausgesetzt, er befindet sich im Besitz eines Phonotaktik-Codes. Mehr Informationen dazu finden Sie auf der Phonotaktik-Homepage, die Sie natürlich über die Kunstradio-Homepage erreichen können. Die Adresse lautet http://think.at/orf-kunstradio. Auch wir haben uns in den Veranstaltungsreigen eingegliedert. Heute und kommende Woche senden wir live aus dem RP4, dem digitalen Hörspielstudio des Wiener Funkhauses. Eine Kooperation mit Zeiton, alles in allem 100 Minuten. Sowohl die heutige als auch die kommende Sendung können Sie auf unserer Homepage live mitverfolgen. Hier nochmals die Adresse: http://think.at/orf-kunstradio. Heute zu Gast bei uns im Studio sind Mike Harding von Ash International, einem kleinen feinen Musiklabel mit Basiszentrale in London, das sich seit 1993 um eine unkonventionelle Soundforschung bemüht. Weiters zu Gast sind Joe Banks aka Disinformation und Andrew Lagowski aka Seti, beide langjährige Freunde und Kooperationspartner des Ash-Labels und beide Meister im Extrahieren des Unhörbaren. Andrew Lagowski beschäftigt sich in seiner Arbeit intensiv mit jenen Signalen, die wir Menschen mit extraterrestrischen Lebensformen austauschen. Das Ausgangsmaterial der Arbeit von Joe Banks bildet die Begleitmusik zu Verteidigungselektronik und Weltraumphysik. Auf der Suche nach dem Klang von atmosphärischer Elektrizität und Erdmagnetismus begibt sich der Soundartist in den untersten Frequenzbereich des Radiospektrums. Das ist ein Cut aus der brandneuen Ash-CD, die heute hier im Kunstradio Zeiton ihre Weltpremiere feiert. Disinformation mit 9 Volt DC Supply with Homemade Copper Solenoids. Das war Disinformation mit 9-Volt DC Supply with Homemade Copper Solenoids, ein Cut-A-9 Ash Today Radio, die Anfang Sommer diesen Jahres auf den Markt kommen wird. Bevor Joe Banks und Andrew Lagowski hier im RP4 im digitalen Hörspielstudio des Wiener Funkhauses ihr erstes gemeinsames Live-Set spielen werden, wollen wir die heute extra lange Sendezeit nutzen und die Künstler selber über ihre Arbeit sprechen lassen. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Hello.
Now it's time to speak English. First question would go to Mike Harding. You're the manager of the Ash International label. The label exists since 1993. Could you say, this is my definition, could you say that the sound work which is released on your label is something like an acoustic mirror of the information society, that it's about tuning right into the heart of the information society?
Well, you could, and certainly that's true as far as it goes, but there are other aspects to the label which coexist alongside that. For example, we've done a couple of releases which try to reintroduce the dramatic element, the storytelling element, back into this type of product. For example, we did a release called Runaway Train, which was a very dramatic account of a runaway train, funnily enough, in Canada in the 1980s. And it's spellbinding narrative, which by the process of the story being told through the technology available becomes that much more dramatic. So that's also a very important part of what the label, if you want to call it that, is trying to do. But certainly you're correct as far as the statement goes, yes.
Do you think that this music, I think music is not the right definition anymore. I would rather call it sonic information. I don't know if you agree that this is the right term for the work that you are doing, because...
Well, but sonic, calling it sonic information would preclude any human element to it. So again, it's right as far as it goes, but that's too restrictive a term. Part of the problem that we have, particularly the job I do, is that the language doesn't really exist to describe what we're doing. And this is why journalists, feature writers and reviewers of what we do really do struggle to describe, explain to the reader exactly what is going on. And this is a problem that has always been with us since we started.
Right, so it doesn't make it very easy for me now.
Indeed, but then who said this should be easy?
Yeah, of course, yeah. It's not interesting if it's too easy anyway. But do you see yourself somehow in the tradition of industrial music? So that industrial music was like reflecting the big factories, the machines there, and now what you're actually doing is more reflecting,
I think that's too glib, because industry... and belching fumes and pollution and appalling housing conditions and all the rest of it existed for many, many decades before industrial music did. And I think industrial music is a reflection of some other things going on. That's not really my background at all. And I would say no, that I don't lean on that tradition. Maybe you should ask the others about them, but for me, no, I would say not.
All right, so that's what I was planning to do. What do you think about it?
Personally, yes, I'd say not in so much in the sense of that it is. The disinformation material is industrial music. It's certainly been an enormous influence when I was a teenager listening to sort of that kind of music. Extends your concept of what is a sort of acceptable as musical repertoire enormously. I was sort of also influenced by avant-garde ideas, but more by the ideas than actual recordings, because the recordings were almost impossible to obtain. At that time, they've recently become, a lot of the sort of pioneering avant-garde recordings have now become easier to obtain subsequently through reissues and stuff like that. But my sort of sense of what is or isn't music, or what is or isn't acceptable as sort of entertainment or information, has been enormously extended by listening to stuff like that.
Now, but aren't you then back into the problem described before about, is it true to call this music? That's not really the point of this at all.
No, but there is nonetheless a direct influence from that genre. Whether or not the material that's produced by that influence is music or not is perhaps another issue.
It's a very tricky area, because you've got individual words which describe huge concepts and huge ideas, and
those kind of things are not so reassembled, though, because terms like that can be a useful shorthand, even if they have their own shortcomings.
What do you think about it, Mr. Lagowski, about this item?
Well, I've
I used to use the term industrial as just a reference to certain music which I liked. I wouldn't call music which I have done industrial music, even though some of the music I've done is classified with other so-called industrial groups. I just call myself an electronic noisemaker or musician or something. I wouldn't say musician even, just a noisemaker. So I think the term which best applies to my stuff is basically electronic music.
Sound.
Right.
Electronic sound.
Right.
Mm.
Actually, when I was listening especially to your music, I had a very personal association. I had to think about a dream, a nightmare, which I had in,
yeah,
when I was young.
Yeah.
It was always the same scenery.
Yeah.
It was no, it was really funny because I haven't thought about it for a long time.
You're
but
not,
it just,
you're not going to say why.
And it was like this, that I was listening to the radio in the
yeah.
dream, and I switched the radio off. I didn't want to listen anymore, but it kept on playing. So I was putting out the plug, and it kept on playing, and
yeah.
I was getting really frightened by that.
Yeah.
So I always ended up with smashing the radio, throw it on the floor or whatever. And actually, I had this dream with different machineries, like once with my washing machine, once with
right.
my CD player.
Yeah.
And it somehow came to my mind because I wondered if you had like experiences like this or thoughts like this, because I think dreams like this, they're all about that humans sometimes they have they are a little bit afraid that the systems that they once invented
yeah.
they might gain power, you know.
Yeah.
So
I mean, to sort of relate it back slightly to what you were asking about before, the original idea was really a sort of rebellion against industrial music in many ways, because a lot of industrial music was based on sort of faking sounds in one way or another, or creating a kind of artificial sound environment and pretending that sounds were created by essentially musical techniques were representative of phenomena from the broader environment, which they actually, you know, for instance, whether they were pretended to be recordings of fact or implied that they were recordings of factory noises when they weren't, or implied that they were recordings of sort of cosmic processes when they weren't. And my initial inspiration was to actually record things sort of authentically, so to speak, or
as they existed.
But sort of as time has gone on, I've realized that sort of looking back on my own ideas and, you know, people asking questions about it has really been the impetus that's caused me to do this, is that there is a kind of psychological element to it as well, which does relate a lot to kind of childhood experiences and dreams and things like that a lot. And almost everything I've done has some kind of personal meaning for me, even though I wasn't necessarily, sometimes I only realised it after I'd done it, of what my sort of motivation was. You know, only when I was sort of prompted to think how other people might react to it that I realised I actually had a sort of deeper motive for doing it. You know,
actually,
that's exactly how I feel, yeah.
It's funny because when I was listening to your work, to me it sounded more friendly, maybe because I think that other creatures from outer space are nice creatures, so I don't know. It was more when I listened to your work, the nightmares were coming up. But when I was listening to your work, I was saying to myself, I would like to meet one from above. how do you purchase your material? Maybe let's try to describe it short, but how do you purchase your material? From where do you get it from? Because
just from taking radio equipment, often very, very simple radio equipment, and doing very unusual things with it. Some of the radio equipment is as simple as being simply audio amplifiers that have been attached to antennas and used in unusual locations. So they're a bit, I like to think of them in a way as being a bit like wildlife recordings or something like that.
And what different kind of frequencies you're using, what different kinds of sounds people can hear in your work?
Some of the most interesting stuff, I think that's thematically interesting, is stuff like radio recordings of electrical storms. So the radio, when lightning strikes, it emits electromagnetic radiation across the whole spectrum, which includes light, but also includes almost all radio frequencies as well, including extremely low ones. And different parts of the radio spectrum respond to being energized by lightning in enormously different ways and produce sounds on radio equipment that vary from anything from sort of tearing and ripping sounds to sort of pinging musical sounds or swooping sounds to low ambient sort of droning sounds. There's a great sort of diverse spectrum of different sort of sonic textures that are available through studying the radio that's radiated by lightning. Also, radio emissions produced by the sun, by nuclear, sort of thermonuclear disturbances on the sun, produce radio emissions which are precursors to magnetic storms. A variety of slightly more, in a sense, mundane radio noises, but also interesting sort of interference produced by industrial machinery and domestic apparatus of one sort or another. Navigation systems, these very low frequency radio systems that are used to broadcast radio messages under the sea for nuclear submarines and things like that. Just basically anything from within the radio environment that's unusual and that
right.
isn't sort of normal broadcast signals. And that you can use, to relate it back to something that Mike said, it's very important that, or it's very helpful to be able to tell a story about these kind of images, you know, that you create a kind of sound image and that you can actually describe to people what it is in some detail. And that, you know, the story that's allied to these images is sometimes quite complicated and hopefully interesting, you know.
Right, we will listen to it in a second. Mm. Mr. Lagowski, you call yourself, for a certain reason, SETI. It means Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it has actually also been the official name of an organization which used to be under the NASA mm-hmm. and is now private. So did you ever manage to get close to this organization? Did you even visit them? Did you get in contact with them?
I didn't. I got in contact with them, but I've never visited them. I've never been to America, so I would just emailed or faxed or something like that, you know, just to try and get more information about things. Because I've been very interested for about maybe 6 or 7 years now in this kind of thing. And at the time I became interested, SETI was still under the NASA control and NASA funding. And, since that time, Congress in America has stopped giving them money. So now they've become privately funded. I think it's important to keep on using the SETI name, not just for my own project, but to let people know that this thing exists and that they should investigate for themselves and
right.
just be aware that things are happening, you know, and just look for themselves, really.
I have some questions concerning that, but first of all, we will listen to the track of you. It's also released on the forthcoming Ash City Radio, Aurora von SETI, Weltpremiere heute hier in Kunstradio Zeiton.
To me, the most fascinating vehicle from the Aurora program has been the TR-3B. It's a triangular-shaped vehicle. It uses a circular accelerator, as you imagine a circle within a triangle. It rotates a mercury-based plasma at 60,000 revolutions per minute, pressurized at 250,000 atmospheres, and supercooled to 150 degrees Kelvin.
Thank you.
Das war Aurora von SETI, ein Cut der neuen Ash Today Radio. Mr. Lugovsky, how do you actually obtain your material?
Well, obviously, my noises, music, whatever, is more musical than Joe's. I think Joe approaches everything from a much more academic and technical aspect. I suppose mine is more romantic way of doing things. I get lots of noises from real audio off the internet, things like that. Also, there's quite a few NASA sites, websites and things like that where you can obtain recordings of satellites and meteor showers and all this kind of stuff that comes from space. And that is incorporated into the music, but I usually do a lot of editing on the computer to make the sounds fit with the background ambience, you see. So I don't present the sound in a raw state. It's not just a naked sound. So I tend to do lots of treatment to the sound to make it sound a bit more fitting for my vision, you know, my idea.
Right. What I find very interesting, we already mentioned it before, is that you're actually getting very close to scientific institutions also in your research. And thinking about a department called Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence always makes me think about information which is hidden from the public, about projects going on behind closed doors, all this discussion about infowar. Is there also something like a reconnaissance activity in your work, or is it more about aesthetics, about the unique quality of these sounds?
Well, both in a way. I'm very interested in secret activities of, you know, governments and stuff like that. I wouldn't say I was interested in conspiracies. That's not really my area, but I'm interested in what happens in the background that no one tells us about, you know. And when you're interested in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, you start to get connected with other things which are happening, like the CIA or NSA in America. We have GCHQ in the United Kingdom, which is a, you know, information gathering and basically a spy gathering organization, information gathering. They can listen to telephone conversations. They can monitor any fax transmission. Internet, everything.
I heard that every single overseas call made from the United Kingdom is recorded.
I don't know, but they can monitor everything. They can listen to keywords. They have a computer which can recognize keywords, and then it can monitor, you know, for terrorism, everything.
Yeah.
My Uncle Eddie worked for GCHQ in Berlin.
Uncle Eddie?
Yeah, he sort of had a project of tunneling under the Berlin Wall, and he was one of the electricians on this project to tap into telephone exchange on the other side.
Did you see that program on television called Cold War about that tunnel?
No.
It was amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And it was, the whole thing was set up with Russian knowledge. Yeah. They infiltrated. They had a spy in the camp. So they just gave them all this information.
He didn't behave then.
And then pulled the plug.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the subject InfoWar is now discussed again very heavily.
Yeah.
So it's also something you have in your mind when you're doing your work.
Yes. Not in a sort of direct political way that a lot of people seem to regard it now, more interested in the kind of early history of things like that, particularly because a lot of the technological innovations that were made in the early part, you know, particularly sort of up to the Second World War, and including the Second World War in radio science, sort of stimulated the developments that led on to radio astronomy, and a lot of forms of interference were discovered in the early days of telephony and early experiments with radio and things like that. And it was the Second World War that provided the kind of technical impetus to realise radio science, which was really almost completely ignored up until that point. And there's a sort of curious relationship between our knowledge of the broader sort of cosmos and, you know, which is a very sort of positive social phenomenon, I suppose, and the fact that almost, you know, perhaps it's difficult to put a precise figure on it, but, you know, just guessing maybe 90% of these technical innovations have come from this very sort of dark social environment. I think that's a sort of interesting sort of irony or contradiction in the sort of origin of these ideas, you know.
Related to this, I have one more last question, and I think then we should go on to the live performance. it would be if you really think that you could get serious information, or you could do serious research over artistic work on this topic, you know? Because I think it was always a topic which was discussed related to also industrial music, or the people who try to get very close to scientific work. And
well, one of the things I said earlier was that, you know, in some ways I was trying to rebel against industrial music, and particularly its sort of tendency to really deceive the punters. It was sort of using these very outlandish, or, you know, there was a tendency to use these very outlandish ideas as a kind of marketing material, sort of marketing speak, without there having much basis in reality. And I've, as Andrew said, have tried to take a very academic approach to these kind of things and do, you know, it's not professional research, but nonetheless it's serious research, you know, and you know, I've written some quite detailed sort of papers, quote unquote, and given lectures about.
But do you think that you can really get close to these institutions? I mean, that you can really find out something, you know, or is it like that they let you investigate to some certain point, but after this point there is, you know, there,
yeah. I mean, one of the advantages of being interested in things that happened in the past. I mean, I've avoided what people call cutting edge technology, you know, as far as possible, partly for financial reasons, because it's very expensive, and through concentrating on quite primitive technology that's very outdated, it also means that you have a much greater degree of public access to that kind of material. I mean, for instance, there's an institution in England, I'm not sure if anything exists like this in Austria, whereby you can actually go and look at old military files. They're sort of open to the public. Some of them are. I mean, they're periodically released to the public, so many of them are still secret. And many of those documents deal with research relating to radar, radio science and things like that, and a lot of them are very interesting.
Actually, I don't know if we have that, to be honest.
You should find out.
Yeah.
I think with Joe's kind of material, they let you get closer to sources of information, don't they? Because obviously with stuff like I'm interested in with the surveillance and all of that, there's no way you could ever get close to that without risking your own life and stuff. It's silly to attempt to do that, so I think we are both coming from very different areas, really, because Joe's is more of an accepted science, and, you know, the ionosphere recordings and monitoring radio and stuff like that, whereas spying is a much more...
Yeah, there's a perceived threat, whereas there's no perceived threat.
A lot of the material I work with has actually been around for a very long time. It's just that it's artistic sort of merit has been neglected in the past, I think, or its artistic potential to some extent anyway.
All right. Mike Harding, Joe Banks, Andrew Lakowski, thank you for the interesting conversation.
Thank you.
Während sich Disinformation und CD nun zu ihren Gerätschaften begeben, noch ein Cut von CD aus dem Album Above Black, Visions Through Other Minds.
Bravo 1, Bravo 1, Rocket 1201 Alarm, Bravo 1 Alarm.
Das war Visions Through Other Minds von Seti, Cut 5 des Above Black Albums. Hören Sie aber nun die erste gemeinsame Live-Performance von Joe Banks, aka Disinformation, und Andrew Lagowski, aka Seti, live aus dem RB4, dem digitalen Hörspielstudio des Wiener Funkhauses. Eine Kooperation mit Zeitton anlässlich des Phonodactic Festivals in Wien. Pay attention, if you care.
Interval separation indicating separate.
Thank you.
Disinformation und CD live aus dem digitalen Hörspielstudio im Wiener Funkhaus, Kunstradio und Zeitung gemeinsam anlässlich des Phonotaktik Festivals in Wien. Was a very great performance, wasn't it, Mr. Harding?
Very difficult to end when things are going well, yes.
Yeah, it was also for you the first time that you heard them actually performing together?
That's right, and hopefully they'll get another opportunity. That was absolutely great. Yeah, fantastic.
That's what I think, definitely.
Yeah.
We have a few time left, about 20 minutes, and we want to play the last four tracks of your new CD, which will come out in summer. Maybe you could explain a little bit who is also on the CD. I just know Bruce Gilbert, but there are some people from Sweden as well. What was the concept?
Sure, well, we've already heard the tracks from Disinformation and SETI, and the next four tracks in order, if you can remember, are the first one by Leif Elgren, who's a Swedish artist, normally involved in the visual arts, but occasionally forays into the sound world. And this track is called Mother, and it's an expression of his grief for the recent death of his mother, which he explored through radio and telephone. The second track is by Hazard, also a Swedish man, Benny Nielsen, and this is called Pina Mundi, and Pina Mundi is the site of the V2 rocket launches in the Second World War. The third track is by Bruce Gilbert, it's called The Book. And I suppose at this point it's important to say that if what we're really all talking about is the effect of machine on man, which I think is what's been happening for the last however many years, what we're really identifying here very precisely. And there are various ways of exploring that. And Bruce's way is by studying the architecture of sound itself. And what he's done with this particular track is to take an acetate recording from the 1930s of a young boy practicing the recital for his bar mitzvah. And the peculiar sound quality of the live recording onto acetate under those unique recording conditions where you could walk publicly into a booth and put something down on acetate, which you certainly can't do now. And Bruce has taken, if you like, a snapshot of this and exploded it into a three-minute piece, which is absolutely fascinating, wonderful piece, and that's called The Book. And the last track is a track which is actually still in progress, still work in progress, by Park. And Park stands for the Parapsychic Acoustic Research Phenomenon. And the track is called Dead Machines. And this is part of a very large time-consuming project that we're involved in, which is going to see the light of day shortly, concerning EVP, or electronic voice phenomena, which is a condition that was first noted in the 30s, whereby stray voices suddenly appear across the radio band or across an open microphone and therefore can be recorded. And no one has finally pinned down the source of these radio voices. And there's been much debate over the years about this. And it's an extremely controversial topic, and it explores also and attacks also the methodology of science, which is another great topic involved, which ASH International is involved in. So those are the four pieces, and the ensemble, the six pieces, including the SETI and disinformation track, come as the second ASH International sampler called Radio, and they all herald future projects by these artists.
Let's tune in.
Noll, noll, The following section deals with examples of voices grouped according to the various recording methods. In collaboration with technical experts, the experimenter has evolved six different methods of recording. A. Microphone. B. Radio frequency.
Sie hörten soeben vier Tracks von der brandneuen Ash CD Radio. Weltpremiere hier in Kunstradio Zeitung. Die CD wird im Sommer diesen Jahres auf den Markt kommen. Davor hörten Sie die erste gemeinsame Live-Performance von Joe Banks, aka Disinformation, und Andrew Lagowski, aka Seti, live aus dem RP4, dem digitalen Hörspielstudio des Wiener Funkhauses. Eine Kooperation mit Zeitung anlässlich des Phonotaktik-Festivals in Wien. Auch nächsten Donnerstag senden wir 100 Minuten live. Other Voices. Messages from the War Zone mit Gordon Baunovic. Die heutige Sendung können Sie wie immer auf unserer Homepage nachhören. Die Adresse lautet http://sync.at/orfkunstradio. Susanne Niedermayer verabschiedet sich für heute und wünscht Ihnen im Namen des Kunstradio-Teams eine gute Nacht. Und lassen Sie sich nicht von Ihren elektrischen Gerätschaften aus dem Schlaf rütteln.